ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। वी वुड लाइक टू वेलकम ऑल दी डिवोटीज एंड गेस्ट्स फॉर द संडे फीस्ट प्रोग्राम एट श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ मंदिर दिस संडे आफ्टरनून। The topic for today's discussion that we have chosen is conflict resolution. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would tell a story of two people who were traveling on a boat and they got into an argument. One fellow said that the best possible instrument for cutting is a scissor. And the other fellow said, no, a better instrument is a knife. And both of them started fighting. After some time, the one fellow threw the other guy into the water. After a lot of fighting. And even when he was about to die, the other person was not ready to accept defeat. He still put up his hand and showed two of his fingers. So conflicts can reach deadly ends. Therefore, it is necessary for us to learn how to deal with conflicts while we live in this world of duality, in the material world. What is a conflict? Conflict is a result of people trying to meet their own needs and desires. Now, all these problems which arise because we try to fulfill our needs and desires, these conflicts, can all be ultimately blamed on Krishna. Because Krishna has thoroughly spoiled all of us. Like sometimes, you know, the parents are warned, spare the rod and spoil the child. So Krishna, being our universal father, aham bija prada pitaha, father of every living entity, he has spoiled us in the spiritual world. Because it is the nature of Krishna that he fulfills even the smallest possible desire of the living entity in the largest possible way. Even if we have a little bit of desire, that desire in the spiritual world is completely, unlimitedly fulfilled, satiated by Krishna. So that becomes the habit of the living entity, the soul. And that very soul, when he rebels from Krishna and comes into this material world, behaves just like a spoiled child. Every activity that the soul, the living entity does in this world, is impelled by the desire to enjoy. To find that satisfaction, which the soul had in loving reciprocation as a servant of Krishna. And then naturally, because this world is not the place where we can enjoy unlimitedly, the way Krishna used to provide for his devotees in the spiritual world, we find conflicts between people. We find challenging situations and our hopes and desires are smashed to pieces. Sometimes life just falls crumbling right in front of us and everything around us looks dead, void, dreary, even difficult to move or live for a moment in this world. In fact, His Holiness, I think it was Mahanidhi Maharaj, who defined calamity as the reality of life around you that gets smashed to pieces. That means we have an idea of reality of life around us. We depend on things, we need things, we are attached to certain situations, and they change in such a drastic way that we do not know how to deal with them. So conflict is a result of people trying to meet their needs and desires. And we have unlimited needs and desires, initially inspired by Krishna. Shyamananda Prabhu was giving this example that sometimes in the African countries, there is a takeover by the terrorists. The government is just taken over by the mafia, the terrorists. And those who are the friends of the government people, their houses are marked with a big cross. And the next day, they come and they blow these houses away. So similarly, when devotees in this world mark themselves to be on the side of Krishna, convincingly try to practice it in their lives and preach it to others that yes, devotional service to Krishna is the best thing that one can do in one's life, then Maya and especially Kali Yuga, like terrorists, they attack the devotees. They are already marked now. Not at the cross, with the tilak. We have marked ourselves. And it is expected that Kali will try with its full force to create conflicts and difficulties in the association of devotees. In fact, Kali itself means conflict, hypocrisy and quarrel. In human relationships, when things don't go together well, then the tendency is to feel that these relationships are horrible. Let me just give up everything and be alone. When we are alone, Kali strikes by making us hypocrite. That is why one devotee said, if you really want to know a person's character, see what that person is doing when he or she is alone or thinks that he is alone. That means the Paramatma and the directions and the sun and the moon and so many witnesses are there. But when we think we are alone, then the activities that we perform, we do, sometimes don't match the activities that we speak about or we preach to others. So alone, we tend to be hypocrite. So then we feel, oh, I don't want to be alone. Better be with others. It inspires. It's very enlivening. So when we are with people, and then if Kali attacks, then there is quarrel. So with people quarrel, alone hypocrisy. Kali is in control. Therefore, it is natural that conflicts will take place and Kali will work over time to create conflicts amongst devotees. One time we did this activity for some school children to give them an experience of how it is so natural to experience conflicts in life. All the children were given 10 beans, 10 seeds in their hands. And a quick announcement was made that you will all be given just 2 minutes to play this game. And at the end of 2 minutes, those students who have the maximum number of beans will be the winners. Your time starts now. And then we were simply looking at the watch. It was an open-ended game just to let the kids experience how they deal with their conflicting needs to play fairly, to know the rules, dealing with people. And we were watching. Some of the students were aggressively confronting with others to get their beans. Some chose to negotiate and somehow grab some beans from the other person's hand by taking their attention somewhere else. Some others withdrew. And some others, they ganged up with some other of their friends and decided to attack one by one people. And then they started fighting amongst themselves for those beans. So it was a very interesting situation. At the end of 2 minutes, we said, time up. The winner who had the maximum number of beans, which were definitely less than 10. So many beans were strewn apart everywhere in the room. Nobody had even the original number of beans that they had. But still the winner was announced and the prizes were given. When we asked the students, how did it feel? Some said, we were very angry, we were defensive, upset, aggressive. It was too competitive. Sometimes we felt out of control. Some said, actually we enjoyed it. In the beginning it was great fun. Till some other people came together who were stronger than us, who attacked us. See, those who were trying to grab their beans from others, they are like the karmis. Those people who are attached to the things of this material world, their tendency is, I have some for myself now. Actually, it's a demoniac tendency, Krishna explains in the 16th chapter. That I have this much now, and he's just watching around. Who has how much? if anybody has more than me or even equal to me, then I must grab so that I can have more than that person. So some were doing that. Those who were trying to talk to others and said, see, at least don't grab mine because I'm not grabbing yours. They are like the moralists. Our Radha Gopinath Prabhu always says that morality is a lack of opportunity. Because they say, well, I won't win by stealing from him because he'll fight with me. So truce. Let's make friends. We both are equal. And just let's remain. And there were those who were simply holding on to theirs and they were going into a corner and facing the wall. They didn't neither wanted to fight, neither wanted to negotiate, nothing to give and take with the game because they had played the game previously. In some previous program that we had done, they had played this game, so they knew what to do. So they put their hand in the pocket, they stood against the wall, and they were just for 2 minutes trying to remain there. They are like the gyanis. Because they have seen this world and they know that there is no happiness in this world. No point in trying to steal from others. No point in trying to run after all these things. Because at the end of the day, nobody is going to have even what they previously had. That's why in the fifth canto, Rishabhdev says, Nayam deha deho bhajam nirloke, kashtan kaman arhate vidbhujamye. He says, this human form of life that we have, it is not meant for working like the dogs and the hogs. Nayam deha deha bhajam nirloke. You got this human form of life in this world, it doesn't befit you to work like the hogs and the dogs. Why? Because if one is working very hard for sense gratification, for grabbing more and more objects in this world, just open your eyes and look. Even the dogs and the hogs in the street are getting sense gratification. So what is the use if you have a higher human form with a higher intelligence for us to also work like dogs and hogs? That's why sometimes people, they blame the devotees. You people are escapists. You people don't work hard. And that is a fact. Devotees don't work hard because hard work is meant for the dogs and the hogs. Because sense gratification, if it is available to them so easily, what to speak of the human beings? So are devotees lazy? Yes and no. They are lazy for sense gratification. They don't want to work very hard. By the way, even the materialistic people are lazy for sense gratification. Actually for material pursuits. They also don't want to work hard. Why? What is advancement? It is explained previously, they had these televisions with channels that one had to go and push. Push button. And it was so troublesome that you go all the way to the television, you push one by one, the channels change. Then they have a push button remote. You can be a couch potato. Sit on your couch on a Sunday afternoon and put one button and the television changes channels. And now they want feather touch. Even the thumb should not be given any pressure or any pain. Just touch and it should change. So even materialistic people are lazy. They don't want to work very hard. So common sense, if devotees are not working hard for sense gratification, that's intelligence. Even the jnanis do that. They've seen this world. It's horrible. It's not worth it. Because when 2 minutes are up, or when 20 minutes are up, or when 100 years are up, the game is over. What can you carry with you? But yes, devotees, although they are lazy for material pursuits, they work very hard for Krishna consciousness. Tapo devyam putra kayena sattvam shudhyet yasmat brahma saukhyam tvanantam. Devotees are not lazy. In the sense that they work very hard for tapodivyam, for austerity which is transcendental in nature. Why? Tapodivyam putrakayena sattvam. It brings one to a higher purified level of existence in the mode of goodness. Shuddhiyet, purified. And what is the result of becoming purified? Brahma saukhyam. One experiences Brahma sukha, higher pleasure. What kind of higher pleasure is that? Anantam, eternal. So devotees are lazy for material pursuits because they know it ultimately ends in conflict. But they are not lazy for spiritual life. They are very enthusiastic, in fact, for spiritual life. So then we ask them, these students, that some of you look quite disgruntled and angry. Why are you angry? So then they gave some reasons. They said one reason is because people were too competitive and too pushy. And that made us very angry. We were angry at all the people, all the other students. The second reason they gave is that we were angry at ourselves because we didn't know what to do. We didn't know what the rules of the game were. We didn't know how to play the game. We didn't know what was fair and what was not fair. So therefore, we were upset at ourselves as not knowing clearly what to do. And then they explained that in real life also, we can see that some people, they will just do anything to get what they want. In real life, it is a fact that fights happen because people have so many needs and desires. Therefore, the psychologists explain that there are five ways that people react in conflicting situations. In real life situations, when they have certain needs and desires to fulfill, when they want things which are available from others, they generally react in five different ways. They fight, or they avoid. Sometimes they surrender. Number four, they compromise. And finally, five, they try to resolve. At first, fight. I win, you lose. Conflict means I have to win. If I am not winning, then I'll keep fighting till I win. That's one way they react to conflict. Another way they react to conflict is avoid. I'll pitch in. Or I want out. I quit. I just avoid the entire conflict. Or I surrender. I give in to keep peace. Fine, just to keep things together. I will not argue with you, will not fight with you. Or they compromise. We'll meet halfway. You come halfway, I come halfway. Both of us will meet in the center and compromise. Find some situation to be peaceful with. Or finally resolve. I'll go through it with you and try to find a solution that is satisfying to both of us. So it is explained that those who actually resolve conflicts in the fifth way, rather than avoiding it, fighting it, or negotiating and compromising, that's a low level of resolving conflicts. There are higher levels where one can actually resolve it for the satisfaction of all the parties involved. What are the underlying emotions that cause conflicts? Why do conflicts take place at all? Throughout the scriptures, Krishna explains, it is lust, anger, and greed. See, we define conflict as a result of people trying to fulfill their needs and desires. So when one has desires in the form of lust or greed, which are not satisfied, one is just trying to exploit more and more, then naturally, conflicts are going to take place. And especially if one gets angry, then those unfulfilled desires will really create massive conflicts. And Kurukshetra war is an example of such a big, huge conflict. In fact, Duryodhan and the Kauravas, headed by Dhritarashtra, we could see lust, greed, anger oozing out of their personalities. Dhritarashtra at one point in time said, Duryodhan also said, he said, I know what is dharma, I know what is adharma, but still I am inspired to follow adharma. What can I do? I think it is the Lord's will. And in this way, they simply gave up trying to fight their inner demons. And on the side of the Pandavas, we see Yudhishthir Maharaj, after going through so many insults, their kingdom was taken away. Their wife was insulted in the entire courtroom. Previously, Bhima was fed poison. All the brothers were burnt alive in the house of Lakh. Of course, it was the mercy of Vidura that they were saved. And after living for 13 years in the forest, 1 year incognito, after such insults, Krishna is requesting just 5 villages so that they can perform their dharma of being Kshatriyas. And Yudhishthira Maharaj is happy and satisfied. If I get 5 villages, no problem. I'll continue my devotional service, my dharma. What to speak of that when Krishna is insulted and Duryodhan tries to catch Krishna, then Krishna shows the universal form and Duryodhan is defeated. After all that, at the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Arjuna is standing with his bow and arrow in his hand, ready to start the battle, the entire course of history is hanging on his shoulders. Arjuna starts feeling compassion. And he feels, why should we kill so many people? He tells Krishna, I am ready to become a beggar. Forget 5 villages also. Let's just give up the whole thing. Just see to what degree they are introspecting whether they are fighting the war out of their own lust, greed or anger. To the last possible point they want to know for sure, Krishna says, stand up and fight, and speaks 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita to convince him. And then Arjuna says, okay, now I think I'm convinced. Nashto moho smritir labdva tvat prasadan maya achyuta. Now finally I'll stand up and fight. In fact, even after the battlefield is, the whole battle is over, Yudhishthir Maharaj starts lamenting. And he says, maybe it's my own desire because of which the battle was fought. For my desire to gain this kingdom, 64 crore people were killed. And nobody could convince him. He was so convinced about his fault. Even Krishna could not convince him. Of course, Krishna was speaking from outside. And from within as the Paramatma, the Acharyas explained, that Krishna was telling him, don't become convinced. Because Krishna wanted Bhishma Pitama to speak transcendental knowledge to Arjuna, to Yudhishthir Maharaj. And Krishna himself wanted to speak the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. So Krishna bewildered him. Arjuna was feeling compassion, but then Arjuna became overwhelmed with material compassion. And it is explained, Krishna put him in that situation to describe the entire message of the Bhagavad Gita. So yes, it are these underlying emotions and feelings of our own unfulfilled greed, anger and lust that leads to conflicts. Even as devotees, we are not exempt. Sometimes we are all victims of anger, frustration. Just like we feel happiness, we feel joy, we feel excitement, we also feel anger. We do feel it. We feel frustrated. In fact, sometimes people can beat the hell out of us, as it is said. Those who we share with, who we expect from, who we need the most, who we depend upon, who are responsible for us, who we rely upon. Such people, at the time of need, when we really just expect them to give us a shoulder, at that time, they reject us. They reject us, exploit us, misuse us, probably even abuse us. And then the world comes crashing down, and it is extremely painful. So the fact is, we might feel angry and we might feel upset and we might also feel so many varieties of negative emotions. However, the key is, we may feel all these things, but we should not act upon them. In fact, we should act based on our intelligence, guided by Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, with the higher self, one must conquer the lower self. See, if we allow only our emotions to play part, and if we are simply acting upon our emotions, then definitely conflicts will take place. So what is the solution? Shyamananda was explaining to us in our counseling meeting one time, this two-pronged solution. He said, number one, become detached enough from our own feelings and emotions. We should be able to see our feelings and emotions as separate from us. And he gave a beautiful analogy. He said, every time we express our opinions in the association of devotees, we should express them as balloons. Devotees also call it childlike, not childish, childlike. Very innocent, gentle, soft. So children, you know, sometimes they leave balloons. So similarly, when we have our opinions, we just leave them as balloons. And when people, they shoot our opinions, then it's like shooting a balloon. Sometimes, you know, when a child is holding the balloon too tight, and if the balloon is pricked, pat, then the child immediately starts crying as if his whole life has gone astray. As if his own heart has been burnt or burst to pieces. So he said, our own strong felt feelings and opinions and emotions about something, they should generally be seen as balloons. So sometimes if people shoot them, they're shooting those balloons. They're not shooting us. Me and my feeling, my opinion is different. Sometimes people hold on to their opinion so strong. Like that fellow. Even when he was drowning in the waters, he was still having a scissor, you know. He says, I may drown, but the scissor is the best. Or like Srila Prabhupada would sometimes humorously say that when two wrestlers would fight, one fellow would beat the other person down. And it is said that till he puts his hand behind and the other person says, okay, enough, it's paining too much. Till then the fight goes on. So even after he recedes, he accepts defeat, he stands up and he says, okay, I accepted defeat, but there is no dust on my mustache, okay? My mustache has not got dust. That means I'm still very strong and proud. You couldn't do that to me. So holding on to strong opinions is a sign of self-destruction. We are inviting actually destruction for ourselves. And the second thing he said is to see the situations more objectively. To work out solutions that are more satisfying to both parties. So wonderful to hear, no? That conflicts can be resolved so easily. Keep our emotions separate. Let them shoot emotions, no problems. Actually, when both parties are cooperating, it is possible to solve conflicts. Because both can try to see it objectively and try to find a common solution. But generally the fact is, one party is generally not so cooperative. And which party is that generally? The other one. Isn't it? It's always natural to see that the other party is not willing to cooperate. I am the always trying to cooperate. Why are you telling me only? I'm always trying to be good, trying to help others. And see, so much I did for that person, but still that person is doing like that only. Never will change. That person is not willing to cooperate. Or isn't willing to change. Or is not even willing to work it out with me. So the natural tendency is to blame. But then the fact is, what if the person is really not willing to cooperate? Or not willing to change? Or not willing to work it out together to find a common solution? So another time, with students, we've done another different activity. And we brought 4 children together on a table, and all others were watching. So it was a competition. 1-minute competition. One child from this side of the table had to compliment and glorify the other 2 children. And then the other child would get the chance. After 1 minute, then the other team, the other 2 on the other side, one by one, they would get a chance to compliment the first 2. And the rule was that you first begin with simple compliments. And then as time progresses, one should give better and better and more creative type of compliments. And what a game it was. It was so much fun. Students are just creatively coming up with better and better and better compliments. And after the whole game is over, then the audience decides who is the winner, who gave the best creative compliments. And it was such great fun. People are coming up with such simple, creative, but funny, but better compliments. They begin by, today your hair looks good. Today you're not so badly dressed. Some negative, positive compliments. And then they really go to very wonderful compliments. This is called verbal jousting. That means you just give so many powerful, higher and higher words that you're trying to compliment that person better and better. And of course, the winner was given the prize. In life, when there are conflicts, exactly similar things happen in the opposite direction. When we fight and get angry and are emotionally charged up, then we start speaking nasty words. And it becomes a verbal jousting. We just speak worse and worse and worse, and the fights go on becoming bigger and bigger. Cursing and counter-cursing. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find in the 4th canto, when Daksha Prajapati, when he entered the arena, shining, effulgent, all the other demigods' effulgence was reduced. In fact, it was not even seen. Everybody got up to welcome him. Brahma, his father, did not get up. Did not need to. And Lord Shiva did not get up. Because Lord Shiva was absorbed in meditation on the Super Soul. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the purports that when we actually pay obeisances to someone or we respect someone, we are respecting the Super Soul in that person's heart. So because Lord Shiva was already absorbed in meditating upon the Super Soul, he did not get up. And Daksha became furious. He had some pent-up anger against Lord Shiva because Lord Shiva was married to his daughter and he was not very happy with that marriage. So then he started blaspheming Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva did not take note. But Lord Shiva's servants, they became angry with him and there was a big fight. Cursing, counter-cursing, and finally it ended up in a big war. We also find that when Kritavarma and Satyaki, towards the end of the pastimes of Krishna in the material world, they started with a small argument and they got into such a huge argument that ultimately the entire dynasty got into a fight and was destroyed. So anger and cursing can actually lead to bigger and bigger outbursts, and verbal jousting can actually keep the real situation aside. And people out of emotions take things out of the real situation. It goes out of hand. Even if you're trying very hard to be good to people, sometimes people really will insult us. They actually insult us. They're out to make trouble for us. So what to do with that? In fact, Krishna himself explains in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that physical injury is not so painful as injurious arrows of sharp words, especially from the people who we love very much. He says, Natatha tapyante viddha puman banes tu marmagay yatha tudanti marastha yasatam purusheshavaha. In the 23rd chapter of the 11th canto, when Krishna starts explaining about Davanti Brahmana, Krishna is explaining Natatha tapyanti vidaha, that sharp arrows, when they are lodged in the heart, those sharp arrows, when they pierce the heart, they don't give so much pain as much as sharp words, when they remain lodged within the heart, they create so much continuous pain. When they remain there. So Krishna is hinting in this verse that we let people insult us. And because we choose to let people hurt us by their insults, we choose to become miserable. Yatha tudanti marmasthaha. He says when those arrows of painful words remain lodged within our hearts, when we allow those arrows to remain lodged there, the sharp arrows of the painful words, then they continuously create pain and they trouble us. So because we choose to let people insult us, therefore we experience pain. In the purport, Hridayanand Maharaj writes that because we identify with the body and with the mind, we feel insult. We find in the story of Jada Bharata that initially when Maharaj Rahuguna insulted him with sharp words, Jada Bharata simply laughed at him. And he said, what are you talking? Are you in your senses? You're saying I'm fat, I'm thin, I'm fat, I'm lazy, I'm disturbed by hunger, thirst, illusion. But all that is for my body. And I'm not this body, I'm a self-realized soul. So who are you talking about? I'm not fat, I'm not thin, I'm not this or I'm not that. But because we identify with our body, when people insult us on the bodily platform, then we choose to let those insults affect us. And if we identify with the mind, then if people attack our personality or our character, then we choose to let them insult and hurt our character. Therefore, Krishna in the 11th canto is explaining the story of Avanti Brahmana to Uddhav. And he starts explaining that even if people insult us, still it is the mind that actually accepts these insults. Nayam janome sukhadukha hetu na devatatma griha karma kalaha manah param karanam amananti samsara chakram parivartayadhyah. He explains that these people are not the cause of my troubles and miseries. It's not even the demigods in the heavens or the karma or the kala or all these things. It's my mind. The disposition of my mind towards these situations is the cause of my suffering. So because we choose to identify with our body, we choose to identify with our mind, therefore we choose to become insulted and feel hurt. So we can also choose to be transcendental. We can see them as opportunities to actually live on the platform of the spirit soul. In fact, a funny story that comes to mind is of Lord Buddha. It's a very instructive story actually. One time a person came to Lord Buddha and gave him 10 bad words. And Lord Buddha gave him a big smile in return. And actually Lord Buddha was on the verge of laughter. He was just about to start laughing. You know? So his friend, Lord Buddha's friend said, "Aray, we are two of us, let's see him, you know. He's alone, we'll give him a good shot." So Lord Buddha said, "Come on, just think. If he gives you 10 lakh rupees, what will you do?" He said, "I'll take it." He said, no, imagine if you don't take it, then to whom does it belong? He said, "He gives me 10 lakh rupees and I don't take it, then of course it belongs to him. Similarly, he gave me 10 bad words and I didn't take even one of them. So to whom does it belong? To him only. And therefore I was laughing at him." So of course it is more easily said than done, because the fact is that we choose to let them insult us because we think we are the body and we identify with our minds. Sometimes we feel that we have to react strongly, is it not? We just have to react with verbal abuses or with physical violence when people insult us or when people do wrong upon us. But in this world, we don't have to do anything. We always choose to, based on the consequences that we see. See, when we become angry with others, what are the feelings we experience in our heart? When people hurt us, how do we feel? We feel revengeful. Actually, we did this in one seminar. And people were really coming up with their experiences. That when we feel hurt, when we feel angry upon others, we feel revengeful, disappointed. We have a loss of self-confidence when we are hurt. We despair. There is dejection. There is betrayal. It's a feeling of fear, depression, envy, anger, frustration. So many negative qualities are experienced in the heart when we are hurt. And on the other hand, when we forgive people and we laugh at their situations, how do we feel? We all have experience of like in Hindi they say, no, gusse pe thook dena. Just spit at that anger, or we just forget the anger. How do we feel? It's such a light feeling. In fact, we feel relieved. There is a sense of peace in the heart. We can even become a well-wisher of that person. Become grateful, optimistic in life, more loving. There is freedom to now move on with life. Because otherwise we tend to live in the past. We can't live in the present. We can't live with life. We are not full human beings. We feel stronger, most focused upon the goal, and we are lifted up to actually practice Krishna consciousness fully. So we don't have to react with anger and abuse others with violence. But we choose to react like that based on the consequences. So if we know that the consequences of forgiveness are so wonderful, then why don't we forgive? Why do we still hold on? In fact, there is a story of this Jim and Jerry. Jim and Jerry are two close friends. Friends for 25 years. Thick pals. Very close and intimate. And then they had a conflict. They had a fight. For 25 other years, they did not talk to each other or even see their faces. Close friends, remembered them each other a lot, but are not able to see even face to face. Do you think they forgot each other? Never. In fact, when we are fighting with somebody, we are more focused upon that person intensely, focusing upon their faults. We can't forget that person. The tendency is, you know, to burn that person to ashes. But anger is that acid which instead of killing others, kills ourselves. And we are so desperate and eager to actually kill that person, we can't get that person out of our mind. So for 25 years, they were good friends. They were always remembering each other as good friends. And for 25 years, they remembered each other with more intensity as enemies. At the end of 25 years, when Jerry was 50, he was about to die in a hospital. So he was meeting all his friends, his family members, colleagues. And he said, there's one person I haven't met. Anyway, I'm about to die, so might as well go and meet him. But he couldn't move out of the hospital. So he requested his family members that please call my friend, Jim. 25 years I haven't met him. Now I think it's high time that we forgive each other. So he calls Jim over. And Jim feels so happy. For 25 years, I have not met my friend. And he comes running to the hospital. So Jerry, who's lying in the hospital bed, he's speaking sweet words with Jim. He actually says, Jim, let's forget our past. Let's just bury all the differences we had. Now we are best friends. I'm going to die. And both of them were discussing very, very sweet exchanges. Late in the evening, when Jim was about to go back home, Jerry said, by the way, Jim, I forgot to tell you one thing. In case if I survive and I come out of this hospital, this forgiveness doesn't last, okay? This forgiveness is only just in case I die. So we do forgive people sometimes. It's not that we don't forgive people. But then we still ask this question. How many times to forgive? So there are different levels to forgiveness also. And we are going to come to that towards the end of our discussion. But then the fact is, we hold on in our heart all these negative elements when we don't forgive. And because of these anarthas of envy, anger, disappointment, etc., we cannot surrender to Krishna fully. It is impossible. Krishna wants us complete. When we are hurt and incomplete, and we don't allow ourselves to become fully mature, fully ripe, fully healthy, then we are not actually offering ourselves to Krishna completely. To err is human. It's a fact that we make mistakes. And sometimes, we make big mistakes. So one way to naturally overcome these mistakes is to apologize. In fact, it's not so easy to actually apologize. When we are angry and we break people's hearts, we hurt them, it's little difficult for us to apologize. But if we do it, then it's a great victory for our own character. It's a very powerful thing. Generally, people feel that to apologize is cowardice. No, to apologize is strength. Only very powerfully strong people can do it. Weak, coward people can't do it. In fact, they keep fighting because they do not have the strength to stand up on their character and actually apologize. It takes great strength and a deep vision to understand that, yes, I must apologize. Generally, when we live on the superficial platform of the bodily concept, we can't see our own feelings of anger and apologize towards the person who we are hurting. When we go a little deeper and we understand why a person is behaving in a particular way, it will actually melt and soften our hearts and we'll very happily apologize. His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, when he was giving his lecture on the art of forgiveness at the Prerana Festival, he was telling the story of this lawyer. There was this lawyer who one time caught hold of this lady who was a drug peddler. And this lawyer was so angry at this lady that she was a drug peddler and she was engaged in immoral activities and she was destroying the lives of people, that when she got a court sentence for about 10 years, he decided to make sure that she remains in court for 20 years. And he fought the case so hard that he put her behind bars for 20 years for her immoral, wrong activities. One day he just decided to go and meet her, find out why she was doing these activities. And when he actually came to know her story, when he actually heard her, he realized that she had three children. One was 8 years old, one was 5 years old, and one was 2 years old. And these children were left by the father. The father had run away. He was a drunkard. He ran away. He didn't take care of them. And she was alone, and having no other means of survival, she had to actually engage in some immoral activities. And she was bursting into tears that, I don't know where my children are now. I don't even know if they are alive. I don't even know if someone has put them into an orphanage. For 20 years, a mother who has a 2-year-old child, she knows what it means. The pain to be separated for 20 long years, to not even be able to see the face of the child. And when this man heard, the lawyer, his heart was completely transformed. He was shocked at what he had done. He understood that she had realized her mistake, but in his anger, without understanding her situation, he had actually penalized her so badly. And when his heart was transformed, he actually begged forgiveness from her. And then he changed his job. He started becoming a defendant for all those criminals who had genuine problems in their lives because of which they had taken to such situations, such activities. So when we generally become angry because of certain upsets superficially, if we go a little deeper to see why people are behaving the way they are having their own challenges and difficulties. And if we can sympathize with that, empathize with that, then our anger will melt and we'll naturally apologize and speak up, "I'm sorry." One Srila Srila Prabhupada disciple was one time sharing the story of his life. And this was personally a very life-transforming story for me also. It was very inspiring to hear. He said that in the early days of ISKCON, it was understood that if you want to be a devotee, you have to live in the temple. So he went home, he fought with his parents, he told them that you are demons, you eat meat, you will go to hell, you are good for nothing, and I am a devotee, so I can't live with you. And therefore I am going to join the Hare Krishna temple. Shaved up his head and started living in the temple. In a few months, he explained that his parents hired some brainwashers. Brainwashers are some people basically who kidnap people. Especially at that time they were kidnapping the Hare Krishna devotees. And they were torturing them, blaspheming them and their philosophy, so that they would give up their faith in Krishna consciousness. So he was actually stolen away from the temple. This was in England. And for one entire month he was tortured. They used to actually these brainwashers, he explained, were so expert at the philosophy. They had read all Prabhupada's books. And they knew all the loopholes in the philosophy. And they knew all the contradictions in the philosophy. Externally, superficially. And they were challenging him. They were bombarding him. And they were talking about all the fall downs of the other devotees. And they were talking blasphemy against Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. And in this way, they were trying to brainwash him. And after 1 month of struggle and good acting, the brainwashers were convinced that now this devotee is normal. He's healthy. He's no more a Hare Krishna devotee. So then they left him. As soon as he came out of the brainwashers' camp, he ran away from England to France, joined the Hare Krishna temple in Radha Paris Ishwar in Paris, and started practicing Krishna consciousness. However, he was very angry with his parents. For 8 years, 8 long years, he was so upset with them that even when they tried to contact him, he would blaspheme them, shout at them. And then after 8 years of practicing Krishna consciousness, one day when he was praying to the deities, something clicked him. And he said, wait a minute. And the whole picture of reality became clear in front of him. Immediately he went to England and contacted his parents and said, "I am sorry." He apologized to them for being so angry. And they were stunned. Their own son, who they thought had rejected them, had just come back and was apologizing.
And they didn't know how to behave. You know, they were just completely confused. They said, we thought that we upset you. Why are you sorry? And he said, after so many years of introspection, I am very much convinced that when I came to the Krishna consciousness movement, I had certain doubts about the philosophy. I wasn't very sure about what I was practicing. And I was hoping that my doubts should be challenged. Whether am I really practicing with conviction or not? And who better can challenge my doubts than the brainwashers? So Krishna arranged that the brainwashers would come and kidnap me, challenge me, and I could see that yes, I had certain doubts, but they were not strong enough to overpower me. And thus I came out successful, and I'm a very strong Hare Krishna devotee now. So actually I had these subtle desires myself, but I was not coming face to face with them. I was not seeing deeper into my own life. Just like Yudhishthir Maharaj was actually doing introspection, whether I am fighting this war for my own sense gratification. Just like Arjuna was introspecting, am I fighting this war because I want to enjoy the kingdom? Similarly, this devotee was also introspecting, and when he came face to face with the reality, that how much did I blaspheme my parents? The very same parents who brought me up for 18-20 years, who tolerated all my tantrums as a child, I am calling them demons. I am saying they are crazy. They are going to hell. I don't even look into them in their face, blaspheme them, give them bad words, run away from them. What else can I expect that this? But then they sent the brainwashers. If I behaved so badly towards them, naturally they would send the brainwashers to me. So when he realized and embraced this fact, and he saw the whole situation deeply, he said, I'm sorry. And his parents just started crying tears. They said, we are sorry. Because we were trying to upset you. We were trying to change your goal and path. So when we see a little more deeply and understand what people are going through, why they behave in a particular way, naturally it will become a little easier for us to apologize. Generally, the tendency is to retaliate. The dictionary meaning of retaliation is to exchange injury for injury and a wrong for a wrong. Retaliation based on envy, it just makes matters worse. How do fights begin? First, there is some verbal fight, calling bad names to each other. Then we shove, we get into a physical fighting, we shove each other. Then we beat each other. And then the fighting continues on and on and on till at least one person dies. So, the conflict is not resolved. Retaliation is not a way to resolve conflicts. Because if, say, the person dies, you say, oh, conflict is resolved, I won, he lost. But what if he has a brother? Then the retaliation goes to his brother. Then he will retaliate back with us. Then we will get another party. And then we will retaliate back with them. So, this is no way to actually solve a conflict. Krishna recommends a higher way, that of forgiveness. In fact, forgiveness pleases Krishna so much that the devotee conquers Krishna's heart when a devotee forgives. We know the pastime of Ambarish Maharaj and Durvas Muni. Durvas Muni was traveling the entire material universe. He went to Indraloka, Brahmaloka, Shivaloka, and they said, oh, please run away from here. The Sudarshan is coming behind you. It's very dangerous. We can't handle that. Because you have offended Ambarish Maharaj, who is a great devotee of the Lord, we cannot help you. This Sudarshan Chakra has to kill you. And then when Ambarish Maharaj went directly to the Supreme Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, he said, even I don't have the power to control my Sudarshan Chakra as long as my devotee does not forgive you. So then Durvas Muni, knowing the secret, ran back to Ambarish Maharaj and paid obeisances to him. Ambarish Maharaj for 1 year had not eaten anything. He was waiting for Durvas Muni to come back simply to say sorry for creating this trouble for you. And when Durvas Muni saw this character of Ambarish Maharaj, his heart was completely transformed. And he started glorifying the devotees. He said, Aho Ananta Dasanam Mahatvam Drishtamadhyame Kritagaso Piyadrajan Mangalani Samihase.
He says, Aho Ananta Dasanam, O great devotee of the Lord. Ananta Dasanam, the devotee of Lord Ananta. Mahatvam Drishtamadhyame, today I have seen your great glory. Mahatvamadhyam Drishyame, I have personally seen it. And what is that great glory of yours which I see, which has captured even Krishna, who says, I cannot control my Sudarshan Chakra till you forgive me. And that great glory is this. Kritagaso Piyadrajan. In spite of being put in a difficult situation, Kritagaso Piyadrajan, Mangalani Samihase, Mangalani, not only did you forgive me, you became my well-wisher. You were actually praying for me. And that is why the Sudarshan Chakra did not destroy me. What is your great quality? I offended you. I sent a demon to kill you. And here you are standing at your doorstep. What to speak of forgiving me? You are my well-wisher. You are praying for me. That great glorious quality of yours has actually captured even Krishna's heart. So when we see things a little deeper, we start realizing that even if people are bad, even if they do wrong against us, if we forgive them, we become free from the cycle of karma. Devotees understand that because of my karma, somebody is doing wrong to me. If I retaliate, then again I am in the cycle of karma. But if I forgive him, he will get what he has to get by his karma, but I am free. Because the law of karma states that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. So if he is giving me pain, then he will get pain back. But if I give him pain, if I retaliate, then I have to come back to experience that karma. So forgiveness does not mean that we accept what wrong he has done. No, he has done something wrong and he will suffer for it. But we agree to not carry it in our heart. Because when we carry that painful arrow, then we burn ourselves. So forgiveness we do is something we do for ourselves, not for that person. And there are so many examples in the scripture to show how Lord Ram forgave Kaikeyi. Kaikeyi banished him to the forest for 14 years. His own father Dashrath died in separation. Forgiven. Lord Ram did not take serious offense. Nityanand Prabhu, when Jagai and Madai hit him, what to speak of forgiving them, he actually begged Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please give their bodies to me as charity. In fact, he saw one good quality, that this Jagai, he tried to help me. If Jagai was not here, Madai would have probably killed me. Lord Chaitanya was in ecstasy. He embraced Jagai. And he said, you help my devotee? I offer you love of God. And then he of course eventually offered love of God to Madai also. When Madai begged forgiveness from Lord Nityananda. Easily forgiven. Dhruva Maharaj, when his heart was completely purified, he came back and he paid obeisances to both his mothers, Suruchi and Suniti. Forgave them, even though she had done wrong to him. So it is a fact that this is a big bad world. And so many people will do wrong to us. But Mother Teresa has written a very beautiful poem, Do It Anyway. And His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, in his seminars on learning the skill to forgive, on the third day, he begins by quoting this poem. Very beautifully inspiring poem. I'd like to read it here. She says, people are often illogical, unreasonable and self-centered. Unreasonable. Reason can't get into them. Sometimes we just feel like we should open up their brains, put some screws together, you know, put things together, put it back so that they understand. Illogical, unreasonable, self-centered. If you are kind, people may accuse you of having ulterior motives, being selfish. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some false friends and some true ones. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Like people say, if I am humble, then people will stand upon me. So if you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, somebody would destroy it overnight. Build anyway. If you find that you are peaceful and happy,
People will become jealous of us. Be peaceful and happy anyway. He says, give the world your best. And it may never be enough. Give the world your best anyway. In the final analysis, it is between you and God. It is not between you and them anyway. So it is a fact that when you do good in this world, when we do some wonderful contributions, people will neglect us. It might just be overseen. It may just be forgotten in the sands of time. People forget good we do to them, the wonderful contributions we make. It may even be misunderstood. Do it anyway. The devotees do not worry about people's reactions because they know that now if I perform devotional service, that is to my eternal credit. Rupa Goswami, it took him 70 years to build the Radha Govindaji temple, which only lasted for 60 years before Aurangzeb came and broke it. So sometimes we may ask this question, why should we perform so many activities in this world of devotional service? Why build big temples? Because anyway, in course of time, it's going to be eroded. The world is not going to appreciate. The material results of our devotional activities may be eroded. But that devotional service which was performed for 70 years by those devotees building that Radha Govindaji temple, that is to their credit eternally. Therefore, Krishna is explaining, do good because it is between you and Krishna. It is not between you and them anyway. People are simply, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was quoting, do not be angry at the instrument of your own karma. Still, the question remains, how many times to forgive? There are some people who just don't get it. They just continue to create trouble one after the other. That means we have not forgiven those people. If that question rises in our heart, that means we have not deeply forgiven them. Because if we are carrying resentment, carrying the grudge, carrying the feeling of hurt in our heart, then those feelings will create despair. So many feelings we were discussing, revenge, anger, disappointment, loss of health. So many troublesome things will be there in the heart. But if you have actually forgiven, then this question will not rise. How many times to forgive them? Again and again and again, to deeper and deeper levels of forgiveness. Then someone may ask a question, do you think we are fools? If somebody is physically coming trying to abuse us or beat us or create violence, should we just continue to remain in trouble? No. We may have to go away from that place. We are not so foolish that when people try to attack us, that we remain in that place and we just be destroyed. In fact, these bodies and minds are supposed to be offered to Krishna. We can't allow them to be abused or neglected or misused. So one must escape from that place in self-defense. What we are trying to speak over here is, when one goes away from that place, escapes from that place, one should not hold it in one's heart. Forgive and forget. It is difficult, but it is possible. If one keeps meditating upon it, introspecting, begging to Krishna for mercy and for prayer. It is said that one should pray to Krishna not to lighten the burden, but to make one's back stronger. Our prayer to Krishna is not to lighten the burden, because it's the nature of this world to throw burdens upon us, but to give us the intelligence and the strength to actually rise on the spiritual platform by neglecting all these insults and forgiving people. There is a place for justice. Sometimes forgiveness may not be the right course of action. Like Dhruva Maharaj, when the Yaksha killed his brother Uttama, Dhruva Maharaj vowed war. In fact, he was out to destroy the entire Yaksha dynasty, the whole race of Yakshas. So yes, when someone does wrong, there must be justice, there must be punishment. But then one should still not hold it wrong against that person. Like they say in Hindi, subah ka bhula, jab sham ko ghar aata hai, to usko bhula nahi kehte, usko bhakt kehte. Because he's forgotten, he's made his mistake, but then he comes back. Krishna, please forgive me, I made my mistake. Then Krishna accepts him. Okay, come back into the association of devotees.
We don't hold it against them. When Kale Krishnadas, when he committed his mistake and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very angry, Lord Nityananda said, "Oh well, you go and perform service to the devotees in Bengal. Tell them the news that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come back. And tell them of all the pastimes that you saw with your own very eyes that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed in the South India Yatra." So we do not hold it against them. Devotees sometimes would commit mistakes and Srila Prabhupada would be very angry. He would chastise them. But when they would come back, then he would forgive them like a loving father. In fact, one time a devotee lost millions of dollars in a wrong investment. And next time when he asked the BBT for loan, Srila Prabhupada said, "Well, we can give it to him. He's a sincere devotee and he's really trying his best. He has performed so much devotional service." So the devotees were saying, "Prabhupada, how many times can we forgive him?" And then Prabhupada spoke up. He said, "I need all of you. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may have rejected Haridas, Chota Haridas, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to set the highest standard. But I need all of you. I am not like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I can forgive them and again take them back into the devotional fold." So the final question that is raised is, that we are raising today is, that we should keep forgiving. There should be justice. But when the person reforms, or even if it doesn't reform, we don't hold it against that person. The fact is, why do we hold anger in our heart? The soul is Sachidananda. The soul is full of ecstasy. Why does the soul not forgive? Why does he hold all these things in the heart so that it creates all these negative emotions? Are we fools? No. We are transcendental. Our nature is to be eternally full of joy and blissful. Then why do we hold on to this anger and not forgive people? The reason is because unconsciously we experience some subtle sense gratification when we don't forgive people and hold anger in our heart. When people do something wrong against us, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was explaining in that seminar, then we feel, "I am right and that person is wrong. Just see what he has done to me. Just see what she has done to me. Just see how that person behaves against me." And when we feel like that, it's a very nice justified situation that we exist in. We feel, "I am good, I am right, and that person is wrong." So this feeling of being good, being right, is such a strong, subtle sense gratification that it actually becomes our identity and one starts enjoying that in a subtle platform. So that day, that person behaved wrongly, said something bad to us, and we condemned that person for life. He or she was wrong, and we became right. Now we replay it in our mind regularly. And every time we replay it, again that feeling comes in the heart. "See, I was right. See, that person was wrong." And that becomes a stronger and stronger feeling of ego. Ego satisfaction of being right. Therefore, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj was explaining that Vaishnavism is to rise beyond being right and wrong. Vaishnavism means to embrace the truth, to please Krishna, is when we rise to the transcendental platform. Don't allow other people to hurt us. And even if they have, forgive them. Don't hold it against them. Because it is simply a satisfaction of this false ego when we don't forgive people and we feel that we are right. All said and done, the final answer Krishna explains in the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam as to actually how to rise above all these conflicts. What to do? He says, "Yatredyante kathamrishtas Trishnaya prashamo yataha nirvairam yatra bhuteshu nodvego yatra kashana." He says, when there is transcendental sound vibration of Krishna Katha, in that assembly where Krishna Katha is going on, the transcendental pastimes of Krishna are being spoken and heard by faithful devotees. Yatre dante katha mrishtas. What result happens over there? Trishnaya prashamo yataha. Amongst the audience, some wonderful things start happening. Trishnayaha. People become peaceful. All their hankerings are satisfied. Prashamo, they become satisfied. Yataha nirvairam yatra bhuteshu. Yatra bhuteshu. And all the people in the audience, nirvairam, they give up all their envy. Yatra kashchana. At least for the time being, Srila Prabhupada says. At least for the time being, when they are in contact with the transcendental sound vibration, for that time being, they give up all envy, all conflicts, all fights, and they become united together, jubilant together in serving Krishna. When Prithu Maharaj was eager to perform the 100th sacrifice, Indra, he was also a devotee, great devotee, but he became a little disturbed because he wanted to keep his position. So therefore, he came in that sacrifice and he started creating disturbances. He took that horse and took the position of some sannyasis. And Prithu Maharaj's son, he was respectful towards the saintly order, the sannyasis. So he did not kill Indra, who was disguised. And finally, when Prithu Maharaj was about to kill Indra, knowing that he is the cause of all the problems in the sacrifice, Lord Vishnu personally came. And it is explained that Lord Vishnu put both his lotus feet on the ground. That is a very beautiful purport. Prabhupada explains that demigods, when they come to this earth, they don't put their feet on the ground. It's too low class. Like, you know, sometimes you go to a dirty place, you just walk on the toes, you know, or on the front parts of the legs, because it's not so clean. And they don't even put their toes. They consider the earth to be such an abominable place. But Lord Vishnu, out of his great affection for Prithu Maharaj, he put both his feet on the ground and his hands are on Garuda, just to balance in case. Because he was not habituated to put his feet physically on the ground. Because of his affection for Prithu Maharaj, he could not go away from there. And why was that affection? Because he told Prithu Maharaj, whether you do one sacrifice or you do 100 sacrifices, I am completely pleased with your devotional service. Give up this desire to perform the 100th one. Be satisfied with 99 sacrifices. And this sacrifice of performing only 99 sacrifices was a greater sacrifice which pleased Krishna than the 100 sacrifices of Indra. So this sacrifice of being connected to Krishna Katha or service to Krishna which pleases Krishna, that can actually bring the hearts of the devotees together. Even if we have certain faults, even if we have certain conflicts, in that situation where Krishna is being pleased, the conflicts can be resolved. Therefore, in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Govindprabhu was explaining that when Bali Maharaj, he offered his prayers to Vamandev, he said, "My dear Vamandev, you have not come here to please the demigods, to be on the side of the demigods. You have actually come here to please me and to take the side of the demons. Aho, aho pranamaya krita samudyamaha. Prapanna bhaktartha hito samahitaha yalloka paler tadanukraho marer alabda purvopasade surerpitaha." He says, "My lord, I just offered you simple obeisances, that too in my mind, because all the demons were surrounding me when I saw you so effulgent as a young brahmana. And what did you give me in return? An eternal residence in Sutal Loka. A great residence in Sutal Loka, where you will eternally live with me. What have I to lose? So you have actually come here to benedict me even more than the demigods." Yal lokapaler tvadanugraho marer. Lokapaler are the demigods. They get your mercy, but pure devotees get your direct association. So he actually thanked the Lord. And then Govindprabhu was explaining that in the Nectar of Devotion, it is explained that sometimes when we are in the association of great devotees, the ecstasy of those great devotees gives us also ecstasy. It's called Chaya Bhava. In their association, we also experience some bhava and some ecstasy. So after the whole episode was over, when Vamandeva asked Shukracharya, "So can you please explain what were the faults, what were the conflicts in this particular sacrifice because of which you cursed Bali? You cursed Bali that you will lose everything. You are faulty, you are wrong. Can you please explain what are the faults in the sacrifice?" And Shukracharya, who was such a staunch caste brahmana, he said, no faults, no conflicts, no problems. Mantra tas tantra tas chidram. Even if there were any faults in the mantras and tantras, Anusankirtanam tava. He said, just because your holy names are being chanted here, you are pleased here. Sarvam karoti nischidram. All the faults, all the conflicts are resolved. Because you are pleased. So if you are struggling hard to actually please Krishna, then in that situation alone can all conflicts be resolved. Because Krishna is the fountainhead where all contradictions can actually be resolved. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I know it's quite late, but still I would like to take one question if anybody has. Otherwise we'll stop here. Is there any one question? Oh, it's a big long question, huh? Respected Prabhuji, in the process of forgiveness, do we have to give up our own values, opinions, or change them? How do we come to the right conclusion? What if our opinions are ethically, morally, philosophically right? Hari Bol. Hare Krishna. So the question is that, do we need to change our morals, values to forgive? That means if I understand correctly, if people are wrong, they are having wrong morals and wrong values, should we accept that? No. Forgiveness is not condoning the wrong that people have done. Not accepting that they are faulty. Or rather accepting that it's okay. No, that is not what forgiveness is all about. Forgiveness is what we do in our heart. By removing that revengeful, resentful, grudging feeling that we have in our heart. So that we don't allow those feelings to hurt us. That person hurt us once. But we allow ourselves to be hurt again and again and again by remembering that every day, every moment. So who is at a greater fault? If you are ethically, morally and philosophically right, should we give up our values, opinions? No, we should transcend our values and opinions. By coming to the platform of the soul, that we don't allow them to hurt us again and again. Of course, if it's becoming physically unbearable, emotionally unbearable, then we may change the situation we are in. But unless we forgive from our heart, the situation in our heart will not change. The situation in our heart will change only when we actually are ethically, morally and philosophically right. That I deserve worse. But Krishna, out of his kindness, has given me this small token reaction. So in the process of forgiveness, we have to do that by removing those pinpricks that are actually pricking our heart, those negative thoughts. We must beg actually the mercy of the Lord, the mercy of his devotees, and by strength transcend this hurt that we are carrying in our heart. Because we can't actually offer ourselves to Krishna completely as long as we are hurt. The acharyas, the great devotees, are praying to the Lord that whether heaven or hell, we don't mind serving you. When can you pray like that? If we have to become great devotees, eventually, in the long run, when we become purified, how can we pray to Krishna that in heaven or hell, I do not mind serving you? That is possible when our internal dialogue, when we are actually so strong and mature, so devotionally perfect, that when the external circumstances of heaven and hell are there, we are not affected by them. So we have to rise gradually to that platform. That's why Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj made this famous statement. He said, what we do and what we say is an insignificant part of what we think and what we are. What we do and what we say in this world is so tiny compared to what we think. We have to live with what we think and what we are. Because that is our nature, our real personality as a servant of Krishna. So Krishna will not be very happy to receive a lame servant or a servant who has no hand, some tooth broken or a broken skull. It's not really a wonderful offering to Krishna. So if you go to Krishna with a broken heart, Krishna, he broke my heart, she broke my heart, he did this to me, then it's not really a wonderful flower to offer to Krishna. But actually, if we heal them these hurts, by forgiving people, then that wonderful heart can be offered to Krishna. And Krishna will be very eager to steal that heart. Just like the gopis in Vrindavan told Mother Yashoda, don't bind Krishna in your house. We are making butter so that Krishna comes and steals. In fact, we are competing with each other that our butter becomes so tasty that Krishna should come to our house and steal. Similarly, Maharaj was explaining that our heart is like that butter pot. And if we churn it and make the butter really soft and nice, Krishna will become eager to come and steal it. And then all these right and wrong and duality questions of this world and this blame game will not remain. Our hearts will become wonderful like butter, which Krishna will be very eager to come and steal. With that, I'd like to stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.